Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome all to another show of Keeping It Brief, where we celebrate the art, the witty art of saying so much with so little. And this is Naomi Sierra here from a website called allpoetry.com. And we are from a group which is called Late Night Poets, with in collaboration with another group, Brevity Writers, for a show that is brevity poems. So, we have different shows, like one, two, three shows per night. Well, Monday's three shows, the other night's two shows, one to two shows. And, we have fun reading poetry and delving into your great rights and sharing them with others, with people that phone in and have fun and just have fun with everybody that phones in and reading beautiful poetry. And we have a board full of poems tonight, so I'm going to go right ahead and welcome on my co-host. Hello, Diane. How are you?
Well, hello, Miss Naomi. Hello, BW. Hello, LNP. It's so great to be here. Love to be here doing the poetry. noticed there is a beautiful line up there, like wicked stuff. Started reading some of it, didn't get far into it, but I think we're in for a treat, girl.
Yeah, sure enough. Yeah, I read through some of it, and yeah, we have quite a few carryovers from last week. I think we have like 13, and then we have the new rights that I had up there. I ran a little contest, and so we have the new rights up. I think it was like 12 spot contest or something like that. And so we have those. Hopefully we'll get through quite a few. We'll see. And Ed.
Yes,
hi, Ed.
Hey, hi. Hi, Naomi. Hi, Mary. Hi,
hello.
Diane.
Hello, my dear. How are you doing tonight?
Much better. I'm getting,
You had a bad flu or cold or...
Yeah.
Anyway, you're coughing awful bad, I think.
Yes. Went to Florida, came back, and must have picked something up on the airplane, and that was 3.5 weeks ago. So.
Yeah, I know, and it's really bad. Like I know, some other ones are. Some of our hosts are getting have been really sick lately, and yeah. Guess the flu's going around, my gracious. And I do understand we have Miriam with us. Hi, Miriam.
Hello, good to be here.
Hi, how are you, Miriam, tonight?
I'm doing all right, thank you. And how are you?
Oh, doing okay. Trying to keep those winter blues away, doing okay. That rhymes. That's my brevity for tonight. And I understand we have Barb with us, Puddles 33.
Yep, I'm here, Naomi.
Hi, Barb. How are you doing?
Doing great now that we're all together and ready to read some awesome poetry.
Oh, yay. And talking about reading some awesome poetry, well, let's get it on. And so, yeah, so Diane, what will be our first read of the night?
Our first read of the night is called Life is a Miracle by Princess Redeemed. Life is a miracle, brevity. And Miriam, would you like to start us off, my dear?
Sure. Life is a miracle, brevity. I was in so much awe when my children were born. Just to think something that special came from almost nothing. Looking at their fingers and their toes, seeing life is so amazing. Oh, the excitement of it all. How could that something special really be? And to think God gave them to me, and they were created by love.
Awesome. Oh, yeah. I'm forgetting my job here. Yeah, awesome read, Miriam. And, what a great brevity, on just those children that we give birth to as a mother. I can totally, relate to this poem, and I'm sure most of you that are, I think we have all mothers here, and, you can really relate to this seeing this life, the excitement of it. That's how I think we get through that, all that pain, and we have another baby afterwards, because I don't know, it's just so joyful, because the pain is awful, well, in my case. But, I had four, so there you go. What did you think of the Diane of this brevity?
Well, this is a beautiful brevity because, yes, life is a miracle brevity. And it is a brevity, you know. When you get to be a certain age, you realize how life is such a brevity and is a miracle brevity for some all throughout, you know, for all of us. But for me, you know, I'm not a mom who gave birth, but I'm a mom. I'm a mom by love, not by blood. And both my children were brought into the world by me and my partner, she carried them. And both my children, I'm as much their parent. We went to court in Canada, and we were the first case in open court where one partner was granted custody and shared custody, guardianship or whatever, of another person's child. So it was a beautiful thing, and my children are their life that I helped create, and it's a beautiful thing. And I just wanted to share that story because it can be, you know, by love or by blood.
Absolutely. That's like my girl, my daughter. She's with her partner, and they went through 6 years of like complete nightmare, and we had our miracle baby. You know, that miracle baby that was born. She's now 2.5 years old. And we call her our miracle baby because it took them 3 years, like 6 years for her to get pregnant by, you know, artificial insemination or whatever you call it in English there. And 6 years of trying. So, and, you know, of being pregnant, of miscarriages, of, you know, all this, you know. You know, all this heartbreak and all this hope and all this. But, you know, we have her now. So she's spoiled brat, but we have her. But, you know, wonderful story. And she carries my daughter, you know, she's not blood related, of course, but, you know, she carries my daughter's last name, and you know, I'm as much her grandmother as I am the grandmother of the my other children, you know, that are, you know, like the my sons and my daughters carried. So she's just as much my granddaughter, so I totally understand that, Diane. Wonderful story. And Ed, what did you think of the poem?
Oh, I thought it was beautiful. You know, the difference of being a mother is as like a father and a dad, a mother and a mom, is how much you care for that child through life. And that is the miracle right there. Having that baby in your arms, and it really doesn't matter who it's from, especially if it is from you. But what I'm saying is to be able to take care of that young child through life is a miracle in itself. And I thought it was a beautiful poem.
Absolutely. Well said there, Ed. Great comment. And Miriam, what did you think of the write you just read, my dear?
It's a very personal poem to Linda, and quite a gift for her to share that with us. And they always talk about mothers looking at the baby's fingers and toes and make sure that they're okay, which in most cases, at least the finger and toes are. I have the handprints and footprints of our tiny baby who only lived for 15 minutes. So, you know, this poem, I think, can touch the hearts of anybody who's ever been in contact with a baby in any way. And Diane, to you especially, want to say I have an extremely large family, and I have completely given up making any distinction between in-laws, difference between a nephew and a grandnephew, who's adopted, et cetera, et cetera. You know, they're all my family, and I love them all.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Wow. Wonderful comment, Miriam. And Barb, what did you think of the poem?
I thought it was beautiful because it has stirred this entire conversation. And I think that's one of the wonderful things about poetry is how it gets us into conversation, sometimes just with ourselves, because we're reading a poem in a room by ourselves, and it gets us thinking and it gets our heartstrings stirring. And I think that is the purpose of poetry. And when we get to read it together, of course, it starts a whole meaningful conversation. So just in that piece, I thought Linda did a great job to help us all connect with this very precious part of lineage, whether it's a genetic lineage or it's a family by choice. Of course, if you have your own genetic child, it's typically by choice as well. But I just think she did a great job of helping to start conversations and helping people see that not only her, but they themselves just have such a beautiful, precious gift in their children.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Barb. That was a inspiring comment and wonderfully said. And what will be our next write, Diane?
Our next write is called Flowers by Debbie Rose. And Ed, would you like to go ahead and read that one?
Sure, I'll read it. Flowers by Debbie Rose. Blossoms, symbol of spring's renewal, adorning our world in fragrant hue. Creation's ornamental jewel. Morning petals douse in glistening dew, honey awaiting its beloved bee, floating perfume, a sumptuous view. Gardens of healing, universal decree, no civic divide, no dander to quell. Nuptial burials and herbal tea, visiting the ill, where Earl we dwell. Angels of joy and jubilation, through color therapy and heavenly smell. Lilac and lily, tulip and carnation, envoys of hope, a sublime elation. End poem.
Wonderfully read, Ed. Isn't that beautiful, eh? Angel of joy and jubilation, through color therapy and heavenly smell, lilac and lily and tulip and carnation, envoys of hope and sublime elation. Wonderfully, wonderfully written. I really like this poem on flowers. It just made me dream of spring. Here we are, like in January, the end of January, and freezing, but made me just wish for that spring. What did you think, Barb?
I thought it was beautiful. I think we often take for granted our social norms, and I thought that Debbie did a great job in reminding us that it has become part of our culture to celebrate certain activities and certain life passages through the gifting of flowers. And they just hold a special place in all of our hearts. And how, it again, a gift from the heavens, just the smell of angels and how beautiful they are, both in the field and as we're handing them to a loved one to commemorate a special time. I thought she did a great job of capturing just the whole part that flowers play in our culture today.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, nuptial burials, And she even has the herbal tea in there, you know. And, yeah, she does capture, you know, the whole, like you said, you know, all that, that flowers represent and all that they do for us in everyday life. And Miriam, your thoughts, my dear.
I think there must be millions of poems about flowers, but there always seems to be more to say. And I think this poem says some things that are very unusual. Just the phrase fragrant hue, I don't think I have ever heard before, mixing the two senses. And the other thing I really like is color therapy. I don't think some people must have come up with that before, but I don't think I've heard it, and I really like it, and it especially as applied to flowers.
Absolutely. Wonderfully said there, Miriam. And what did you think, Diane, this wonderful poem?
I just thought that this was so inviting of my senses and teasing me, and it had a sensuality for its color and smell and the descriptive wordplay, just amazing wordplay that she brought flowers, not just a particular flower, but she brought flowers in general to life for you in a moment of, I don't get to see flowers right now. I see white snow. So this poem just wakes up your senses and tells you what's down the road and brings out what you remember from before. Just a beautiful write. And I noticed it was a front page pick and well-deserving.
Oh, there you go. I didn't even notice that. Wow, wonderful. Congratulations on that front page pick, Debbie Rose. So, so well-deserved. And did I ask everybody, Barb, who read that? Barb, did I ask you? Yes,
you did.
I did. Yes.
Not Ed.
Ed read it.
Yeah,
you read it,
I'm
my dear.
Around.
Yeah.
I'm kind of around. But, you know, she brought out the universal love in the world of what a flower means, from healing to happiness. Sense of bringing people together. And, you know, the flower is worldwide being used for, you know, everything from burials to happiness to love. And she did a wonderful job with this, right?
Mm-hmm. Wonderful comment, Ed. Yeah, she did indeed. Wonderful. Yeah, well-deserving of that front page pick. Like you said, you know, she did a wonderful job. And what will be our next write, Diane?
Excuse me. Up next, we have Marinating Moments by Judd. And I will ask you to read this, Naomi, and I will be right back.
Okay. Marinating Moments. And a long aisle arrayed with amaryllis of us, bevy of butterflies, flirting with zillion blossoms, unfurling trails of laughter into happily forever after, aureola laughter glows of amour, our glimpse into gratifying galaxy bumps, gasping in gratitude, woven from tapestry of teardrops and dreamy dewdrops to raindrops of rêverie and realities, knitting kindled kisses into knots of kaleidoscopic caresses. From naked lips and scarlet tulips, we waltz away, tiptoeing like feathery fingertips on keyboard spine, plating pastels of pleasured petals, panting neath passionate rib cages as we make magical, mirthful mirthful and moanful moments into memories marinating upon Marmaris. End poem. And what a beautiful, you know, wonderful waltz of perfected little moments, just magical. And the words, wow, you know, the alliteration and the wordsmithing in this piece is just beautiful. And I see, it won a gold, but I think it's won my gold. No. Won a gold, but won a gold. Yes, and very deserving. And but Judd is, my gracious, a wonderful poet and a wordsmith and a great, 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 writer. He just captures those moments with his words. And what did you think, Barb? Barb, I'll go for you to you first.
Well, thanks, Naomi. I thought it was beautiful. He had me at marinating moments. That just sets you in a beautiful head and heart space to sit and simmer in anything he's going to throw at you. And he throws a lot of beauty and sensuality, intimacy, just with beautiful wordplay. I really love woven from tapestry of teardrops and dreamy dewdrops through raindrops of revelries and realities. Just, it's like, it's not always going to be just love and joy, but sometimes tears in tough times can also marinate and in the end strengthen a relationship and make that intimacy even deeper and more meaningful. I just think he touched on so many notes. Speaking of notes, like playing the piano on a spine, that actually gave me goosebumps thinking about that, that whole fingertip on the back. He has a marvelous way of just arousing thoughts into feelings and sensations, and this was a masterful piece in my mind. Really enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree. Yeah, there's so many parts of this, you know, like right after the part that you read, Barb, you know, knitting kindled kisses into knots of kaleidoscopic carazas, you know, that is just beautiful too. And, you know, all the way through, I just see all these little moments put together. And I agree, you know, it's not just the happy, loving moments. It's also the times that you cry together also that, you know, are important. And Ed, what did you think of the piece, my dear?
I thought this was nice, flowing with a succulent imagery, a beautiful poem of life. And I think one of my favorites is from Naked Lips and Scarlet Tulips. We waltz away tiptoeing like feathery fingertips on keyboard spine. I thought that was unique, and the visualization was wonderful of using a piano for love.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can just, yeah, so true. You know, the notes along the piano, the different moments of love, those notes, musical notes. Well said there. Great comment, Ed. And Miriam, would you care to comment?
I think I would like almost any poem that has butterflies in it. But what I really noticed about this poem was a really expert use of alliteration. It's not overdone. For one thing, the phrases are often the lines are broken between the words, like flutter flirting. And my favorite, there is a long string, but it's just so well done. It's a glimpse into gratifying galaxies of goosebumps, gasping in gratitude. But Galaxies of Goosebumps. I hope I will remember that. I mean, that is just great. I love it.
Absolutely.
I hope I never get Galaxies of Goosebumps, but I like to think about it.
Yeah, that just flowed away. But, you know, wonderfully, wonderful comment there, Miriam. And Diane, are you back with us, my dear?
Yes, I am back. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yep. Loud
okay,
and clear.
Yeah. Yes, I enjoyed this piece. This, you know, the title had me wondering about these marinating moments. Because, you know, the word marinating is a powerful descriptive way to say, you know, soaking up the moment it's flavorful. It gives flavor. It gives me a lot of flavor. And each moment individually, you know, the moment of the butterflies and flirting with blossoms and then the aureola afterglows of love, of amour, of love, and, you know, all the moments just, so they're soaking up their individual sauce, their flavor. It's just from naked lips and scarlet tulips we waltz away. Another individual moment, soaking everything up like feathery fingertips on keyboard spine, like just what a choice of words and what a way of presenting them. Beautifully done.
Wonderful comment, Diane. And I think I got everybody. Hey? Yes? I see Wayne is commenting on the board, lots of details with alliteration and metaphors, indeed very poetic, great job. Yes, indeed. Wonderful comment, Wayne. Wayne wanted to phone in tonight, but he's suffering from a voice problem with his voice because he saw a football game and he screamed so loud that he has no voice left, I guess. So, yeah, poor Wayne. So, yeah, give you a break, Wayne. And before I go on, Miriam, I just want to ask you how long you could stay with us so that we know when to put up your poem, my dear.
I can stay about 8 o'clock, until about 8 o'clock. I've got another
Okay, thank you. So just so that Diane knows when to put up your poem. Okay, great. So where will we be going next, Diane?
Next, we have A Season Summer Light. And I'll go ahead and read this one. It looks like a haiku, yeah, a true haiku with alliteration and full rhyme, 575. Season summer light, fireflies in flight, bioluminescent sprite, a seasonal light, end poem.
Wonderful read, Diane. And, you know, I really like this. It's really, it's short, but it's catching and it's enchanting, you know. And, of course, I love fireflies. Like, I mean, it just took me right back to my childhood when I was running around with, those mason jars in the fields trying to catch them and, you know, and poor little fireflies, oh, my gracious, you know, caught in the jar. But, you know, I'd let them go after a while. But, they'd make wonderful lamps, you know, in the summer evening, the summer nights, playing there. And Miriam, what did you think, my dear?
I think the haiku police on all poetry would throw this one out, but I really like it. And it's got the old haikus back in, when I learned about haikus back in high school, the main emphasis was on having basically one image and one emotion that you're conveying. And that's what I find in here. He's only talking about fireflies. He's not bringing in tiger lilies or whatever. And he's got some science in there, but he's got the feeling of fireflies. Just fireflies in flight. You can see them. And the bioluminescence is bright. There's the scientific emphasis that we know that fireflies have their own light that comes from their bodies. It's not reflected off the sun or the moon, anything like that. And they are particular to a season, they're particular to summer. And I have lots of firefly recollections that I could tell you, but we've got lots of commenters, so I will leave it at that and just say I think this is one of the best I've seen from Poetic Prince.
Absolutely wonderful comment. Yeah, and 70 comments, 70 likes, my gracious, wow. And was this a front page pick? How come I don't see it if it's a front page pick on my computer?
You have to click on the title. And then...
Oh, okay. I do.
Right. Now I can't see it. Sorry, it worked last time. Somebody else.
Okay. Well, yeah, Barb, your thoughts, my dear.
I love this because it just brings back all those memories of summers and the fireflies and the dusk turning into early nights and just how exotic and exciting seeing all those bleeping lights coming and going across the field. And we have a lot of them here in our home, in our yard, and they're green, but also in the area in which I live, we have special blue ones as well. And people come from all over. It's actually quite a tourist attraction to see them, and they only occur in very specific places. So I think most people have some kind of a very dear memory with firefly. So it's fun to read about it. And I thought he did a really good job to not just talk about the science of it, but also just that it's seasonal and, you know, it's in flight, and it just really kind of scratches at a lot of memories that are always very fond.
Absolutely. Wonderfully said there, Barb. And you, Ed, any running around with fireflies when you were young?
Oh, yeah, all the time. You know, what's really nice about this poem and unique is he has it rhyming, you know, with flight, bright, and light. That's pretty hard to do with a haiku, and I think it blends nicely, and the meaning is right there. Everything is there for a ningbug, a firefly.
Yeah, hey boy, I didn't even notice that it rhymed till you said it. You know, that's what made it flow so beautifully and sound so nice. Now that I look over it and I reread it, so true. Great observation there, Ed. And Diane, your thoughts?
Yes, it isn't a front page pick. But it is. It has been in 17 contests, and it placed in all but four. So it's very popular and very well liked, obviously. But fireflies in flight, bioluminescent bright means. I looked it up, and it's the brightness by a living organism, and. He's bringing in that human essence into the fireflies, that human organism or that living organism, fireflies in flight, gave a chill to me when I read that. It was just a beautiful, very well done. I agree with Miriam that this is probably one of the better ones I've seen.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Wonderful comment, Diane. And well done, Poetic Prince. Wonderful, right? And where are we going next, Diane?
Next, we are going to, also, this is called Love by Hat. And I'm going to ask Barb to read that one.
Okay, hello? Thank you. So I'm going to read this. It's called Also, This is Called Love by Hats. Two porcelain cups in a teapot. Mint leaves dance in the water molecules. Before sitting down, she smoothed his unruly curls with her hand. Then she laid her bare feet on his lap, and he gently massaged them with his slim fingers. Whatever they talked about was heard by the old apricot tree. End poem.
And you know what, a beautiful, oh my gracious, this just, oh, I don't know about you guys, but this just, you know, set me chills. I don't know, I just drowned in this brevity. It's just so so beautiful. And when I gave it gold in the contest, and you know, I don't know, it's just something about it. It's so warm, it's so tender, it's so loving, it's so authentic also, you know. I just, it's a slice of life, it's a slice of love. I just loved it, you know. And all the imagery, all the rawness of it, all the its simplicity, it's just, you know, talks to us, just whispers, you know, tenderly to us, I think. What did you think, Ed, my dear?
The visual reality is what we all would love to have. And this was done very well, you know, and she breaks down each part of falling in love or being in love and feeling that moment as of in nature and with your partner. I thought it was wonderful.
Yeah, well said there, Ed. Beautifully said. And what do you think, Miriam?
Well, I'm now following Hats, and I put this poem in my favorites list. This is, it's just stunning. There's a story. You can see the scene. You can imagine what is being talked about. And I just wrote here in my note to Hats that I envy the old apricot tree.
Mm. Oh, that's so beautiful. I'm sure she's going to love that comment. Oh, my gracious. So beautifully said there, Miriam. And Barb, what did you think, my dear?
I love the calm presence of this poem. I love that she's sharing a very intimate yet everyday moment, and it just makes it something special the way she's described it. These are the moments that we all have that we never take a Polaroid of. We don't have photos that commemorate these moments, but these are the moments that make life really quite special, especially special with that certain someone that has an intimate place in your life. I just love her descriptions. I love the pacing of the poem. At first, this is not the first time I've read this. I actually have read this one a little while ago. And I thought she was talking that perhaps she had a small child in her lap when she said she smoothed his unruly curls. I was thinking she had a child. And then, of course, then this individual, she laid her bare feet in his lap. So then I knew it was a grown man that she was with, but it still, it just played so beautifully. And I love how she starts it with the teapot. She sets the stage. She sets the tone. You immediately, your energy level is going down to match that of the scene that she's setting. I just loved everything about this.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like a fine piece of delicate porcelain. That's what it is.
Yes, and
so beautiful. And what did you think, Diane, my dear?
Well, I totally like the setting, the two porcelain cups and a teapot. That just creates the air of love. I mean, how can you not feel love when you see that? Whether it's love between a woman and a man, a spouse or two spouses or two friends or, you know, whatever kind of love, two porcelain teacups and a teapot sure says it. And just it touched me. There's something about it. It just touched me, and I can't give it an exact reason why, but it did.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment. Yeah, that's what I wrote, that it was touching, such a touching poem, so beautifully written. And what will we be reading next, my dear Diane?
Well, up next we have Spring Snow Observed by Miriam Kilmer. And I'll let our girl Miriam read that one, and I'll be right back again.
Okay.
Good. I'm with you. I'm just fighting my computer here. Let's refresh it, I guess. There it is. Nice short brevity. Spring snow observed. Snow floats, lacy petals, stars, dry grass. Silence shivers. Children gasp. Spring retreats on hurried feet. Snowfall deepens. Bundled children slide down distant slopes, restoring hope. I'm satisfied as long as I can stay inside.
That's it's about like me. I used to go sliding and skiing and everything, but now kind of hibernate in the winter time. What did you think, Diane? Oh no, Diane went left for a minute. What did you think, Barb?
I love this. My favorite two lines were spring retreats on hurried feet. It just totally lets you know what's going on. And some people are loving that in this poem and some people are hating it. But that's a really good descriptor. Actually, a lot of wonderful descriptors here. Snow floats. I love the lacy petals, star dry grass. I'm assuming that's like a frost that's coating the dry grass, and you can just see all the beautiful lace work that creates. And silent shivers. Love that alliteration. I love the feelings that emotes. I love being cold. I love a sense of being numb. When I really have to concentrate to get my words out and making sense, that's the state of being I love. I know I'm very strange in that way. I am Canadian, so I guess that makes sense. But I love the whole scene that this sets. And I actually had to chuckle because this person is describing this beautiful set up where it's beautiful. Spring is taking a bit of a hiatus. It's giving the snow the stage again. The kids are loving it. But then she finishes with, I'm satisfied as long as I can stay inside. So it's kind of a very funny tie up to it, and it's just a fun read. I really like it.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Wonderful, wonderful comment there, Barb. And yeah, you know, me too. I was really drawn, Miriam, to your adjectives there. Your, you know, the imagery, lacy petals, star, dry grass, and you know, of course, silence shivers. And you know, yeah, silence shivers. There's just something about that. Like Barb said, you know, there's just something so. So evocative about those two words together there, the silence that shivers. And, you know, it is like a great descriptive word for to describe winter indeed. And Ed, what did you think, my dear?
This is the last fun for the children in the winter before the snow is gone. And she brings this out. For the kids of how much they enjoy it. And as an adult, she's going to stay inside and stay warm. So there's kind of two parts here of watching the children have a blast while they're an adult or whoever's inside staying warm. What more can you ask for? You're warm and you could see all the fun outside. It was a beautiful poem.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, wonderful poem, Miriam. And Diane, are you back?
Yes, I am back.
Hello. What did you think of Miriam's poem?
Oh, I loved it. I listened to her reading it as I was walking around, and I was entranced. It, right from the very first, I mean, spring snow observed. How can you better describe spring snow than snow floats? I mean, that's so spring, and that's so, I've never ever, I'm a Newfoundlander, I grew up on the snow and in the snow, and I've never seen it as snow floats, but that's exactly what it does in spring. And then another one that really captured me was spring retreats on hurried feet. I just love that, the spring running away and the snowfall deepens, becoming, you know, another season. And just excellent job, Marianne. Very well done.
Thank you so much, Diane.
Oh, this was a wonderful, wonderful share, Miriam. And it made us dream of, well, made me dream of spring anyway. So beautiful job. Wonderful, wonderful, right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And what will be our next write to Diane?
Our next write is "And the Winter Is" by Leif Van Amsterdam. And I will ask Ed to give that a read.
Okay, great. "And the Winter Is." On your marks, get set, go. And with that, they were off. Diabetes out in front, cholesterol just behind. But what's this? An emergency troubled mind. PTSD in the race. Schizophrenia catching up. Hernia is gaining speed. Who will win the cup? The favorites battle it out. But there's a darker horse. Melanoma. Coming up the side. It's skin cancer, of course, faster and faster, quicker and quicker. It's going to be a photo finish to stop this ticker." End poem.
And, you know, I found this so, so clever and so witty, you know, and just, you know, the way he put all these, you know, these problems that emerge, well, you know, every day, with, you know, a lot of people. And, you know, of course, cancer there, you know, at the end. And, you know, when you think of cancer, the number one killer of in the you know, in America right now, I think so. And, you know, but he has diabetes there. You know, my mother has diabetes. My brother had diabetes when he was in his 20s, you know. And thankfully, I didn't get that gene. I don't have it, but, you know, we have it in the family. And, yeah, cholesterol, of course, you know, as you get older, who doesn't, you know, a lot of us have problems with our cholesterol, PTSD, which is, you know, just an awful, awful thing to deal with. And schizophrenia, you know, when you think of mental health problems, hernias, you know, this is just a wonderful, clever write that makes you think, you know. Anyway, it made me think of the future, what is in store for me, you know, what will catch up with me, you know. So wonderfully written by Leif Van Amsterdam, which I'm really happy to see in one of our contests. And what did you think? Let's go to Ed, you read it. Let's go to Barb. What did you think, Barb?
I thought this was wonderful, an absolute potpourri of illnesses. Take your pick. Something's going to get you. I enjoyed the personification of illnesses. Like, they're all trying to be the first to take you down. So it gives a levity to the heaviness of illnesses that hit us at some point. And take your pick. Something's going to get you. But I love the fact that it's turned into a race, a horse race. And the images that he uses, and just putting it all into perspective, you know, all the stew of your body is working beyond your control. So just take it each day at a time. Take it as it comes. What will be. Run your own race while your body runs its own. And the ending was really good as well. It's going to be a photo finish to stop this ticker. So clever, so humorous, even in the heaviness of the content. I thought it was a really smart write.
Yeah, me too. I saw the humor in it, you know. In the middle of all these sicknesses that they're talking about, but I did see, you know, a certain humor, a certain... I did see that in the poem. And what did you think, Miriam? Is Miriam, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay.
I love the irony and the dark humor in this. And I've just been, you know, I have a very tender heart, and I'm just hoping that this is not autobiographical. I sure hope nobody has to deal with all of these. So I do hope that he's talking about a population running this race and not his own self.
Oh, absolutely. Me too. My gracious. I think so. I think he's talking about, you know, I hope so, because my gracious. Yeah, like you said, Miriam, you know, that's a lot to deal with for sure. And who didn't I ask? Oh, my gracious, I'm getting mixed up here. Ed, what did you think of the poem, my dear?
Well, it is a dark humor. I think everyone at one time is going to have a situation or a sickness like this. I already had the hernia, so I'm over with that now. But, you know, there's a little bit of everything here that, you know, someone's going to have. It's just a part of life. It's very dark type of humor, but it was done very well, you know. For he's bringing it out in the open, you know. He's not holding back. this is it, you know, and, you know, there's nothing you could do to stop it.
Absolutely. Wonderfully said there, Ed. And, you know, it's so true, you know, when you know, you can't stop that race, you know, when sickness, you know, comes, you know, maybe you could slow it down a bit, maybe with, you know, exercise and diet, you know, when a sickness or, you know, care, health care, but medication maybe, but, you know, there's nothing much you can do, you know, once it hits, it hits. And Diane, what did you think, my dear, the poem?
Well, you know, I agree that it was some good humor in it, but, and the dark humor, like Ed said, right? But there was also, you know, and for me, there was a fear and an anguish in there. Like, you know, your washed up, stretched out organs are in this race fighting to see which one is going to win you, win the stopping of your heart, the ticker, and it's going to be a photo finish, and it looks like melanoma was coming up the side, so it's between melanoma and diabetes is out in front, and I'm a type 2 diabetic, and I'm sitting here going, go melanoma, go.
Oh,
my God. It's a race of that can emerge, can bring up in you the fear of, you know, like when you're at my place and your organs are going to start saying, okay, it's time. You know, this can be kind of scary, but it's the reality. And reality is, though it may be humorous, reality is just that. It's real. Excellent right.
Absolutely. Wonderful right that causes us to ponder also, very thought-provoking.
Can I say one thing? I think stress causes a lot of this that he has up there, and that's a major problem with everyone today is stress.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Yeah. So what will we have next, Diane?
Next up, I'm just going to go back. We have Who by Fire by Eva Palazzi. And I will go ahead and give that a read. Or, wait, does that have a SoundCloud?
No.
Nope.
It's just a video.
Okay.
Who
by Fire. It's okay to fear when monsters hide under the bed and uniforms rise among barbed wire barracks while Moses shows up. The stone tablet laws of the deity vainly to those of whom soap is made where David's star being tied to extinguish through crematorium chimneys while self-appointed prophets rip the book of life from Elohim's hands and inherited nightmares are lurking behind wardrobe corners. When I have been laid into a Holocaust-lined cot bed and Abraham's blood chisels 2,000 years persecution on my face, don't tell me that it's not okay to fear. End poem.
And you know what that was an excellent read, Diane. And what a profound, thought-provoking piece, so divinely well composed. And you know, we must never forget these horrific happenings like the Holocaust. And you know, it's just this is just so wonderfully, wonderfully put. What did you think, Barb?
Yeah, this is a very deep, emotive. Melancholy isn't the right word because it's beyond that. It really is about fear when not just your life, but your whole culture's existence is being threatened. And I don't think the pain of that annihilation ever goes away. You know how hard it is when grandpa dies? Imagine when your whole lineage has been taken from you by a beast. It wasn't a cancer that took them. It was someone's decision to take them. I must think that the scarring from that never heals. And I think this poem does a beautiful job of reminding us never to forget. And I love how she brought in both the images of the horrors along with the images of the Bible in the individuals from the Bible, and that juxtaposition of evil with holy and goodness. And it really boggles the mind that this could have ever happened, and how God must be screaming and ripping his robes. I just thought that there are so many layers and so much depth to this piece. It's incredible. It's incredible. I really love it. And I'm actually going to, I will read this several times on my own later tonight.
Absolutely. And I think I gave this one the silver in the contest. The bronze. Yeah. And and it was a wonderful, you know, heartbreaking piece, like you said, and, you know, one that makes us really think on all the horrors that people, the Jewish people, went through, and you know, so many other people that were, you know, the not just the Jewish, but, you know, so many other people too that were marginalized, and then, you know, that were, my gracious, but the Jewish was horrific. And what did you think, Diane?
Oh, this was, you know, this concept of it's okay to fear kind of goes against what I believe in, because for me, the fear, when I fear something, that's what brings that stress, and that's what occupies my mind and takes away my peace of mind when I fear. And I live by the law that, you know, fears are what they are, what they're just that. They're false evidence appearing real. And fears are not real. So rather than lose a night's sleep, I think for myself, I go, it's not okay to fear. Put the fear aside, because when I go to bed and go to sleep, I try to set aside things that really keep me awake, and fear sometimes is on the top of the list. And but this, the way it grabs the concept and pounds out the concept, like it does talk about the stone tablet laws, and that's the way it gives this concept of it's okay to fear. It gives it as if it's a law, like a deity, you do this, and don't tell me that it's not okay to fear. Very powerful imagery, very powerful word choice, excellent, well done, and makes a believer that it's okay to fear.
Absolutely. Well said there, Diane. And Ed, your thoughts on the poem?
Well, I think it's almost the opposite of it being okay to fear, because they've been fearing for over thousands of years, and it's still happening in synagogues. It happened not too long ago in Pittsburgh where they blew up a synagogue. It's there. You know, I wouldn't want to live like that all the time in fear. It's horrible. It's disgusting. It's evil. And these people have been living like this forever. And it seems like the hate is atrocious. And you know, I don't know how something can stop this, you know, just the way people are. So it's very, this is a heart-wrenching type of a write because it's bringing out the truth, but yet I don't think it's okay to fear something like this. I think it's disgusting to say, okay, I'm scared. You shouldn't have to be scared at all. It shouldn't happen. Understand what I mean?
Mm-hmm. It shouldn't happen, but it does. That's it. Yeah. And you can't believe that you know, that so much hate can come from a human. Yeah, you know, so much. I don't know what it is. Just not enough education. Just pure ignorance. You know, that's what it is. It's just, you know. Yeah, it's hard to wrap your mind around something that's so you know, dehumanizing, so you know, without any empathy, without any feeling, you know. There's so much hatred. What did you think, Miriam? Oh, Miriam, are you still with us, or no? Oh, I guess maybe she's gone. Okay. Did I asked everybody then, I guess. And what will be our next write, Diane?
Black Hole by Forgotten Dream. And Naomi, can you give that one a read?
Okay, well, do you mind if I ask Barb? My throat is getting a little...
Not at all.
Okay.
Barb, could you read that one for us?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'll read it.
I'd love to.
Okay. Oh. Who's reading it?
Barb.
Is Barb going to read it? Okay, good.
Okay, I'll go ahead and read it. Thanks, Ed. Black Hole by Forgotten Dream. Kissing soft saline lips goodbye, I walked around the corner and only looked back once. My fingers traced the shape of the ragged cavity left in fractured heart. Sharp edges sliced like paper cuts, teardrops stinging. Obsidian distance stretches like a black hole, sucking in the sunshine of days, the fabric of my world, the makeup of the stars, until it swallows me whole. End poem.
What a beautiful write, eh? By Forgotten Dream, as usual. Oh, my gracious. You know, obsidian distance stretches like a black hole, sucking in the sunshine of days, the fabric of my world, the makeup of the stars, until it swallows me whole. Just such a beautiful write, you know. You know, the sad, you know, emotions conveyed here in such a masterfully written way, you know. Oh, my gracious. She just brings all that emotion out, you know, in this piece. You know, you being that black hole, or her being that black hole, you feel it. You really feel this poem. And what did you think, Ed, of this poem?
It was very expressive, strong, emotional write. It has the word usage is great. You know, heartache, heartbreak, loss of a loved one. This has a meaning of someone just falling into a rut or whatever, with some type of a situation that happened to him. She brought this out very well, of explaining how someone can feel when there's some type of a heartache or emergency that happened to someone.
Oops, Naomi, off the mute button. Yeah, absolutely. Well said there, Ed. And Diane, what did you think, my dear?
Oh, this packs a punch. It, right from the first line, kissing soft sailing lips goodbye. I walked around the corner and only looked back once. There's a black hole, and then there's blackness. And blackness can come, you know, from all around you. It can wrap you up. And my fingers trace the shape of the ragged cavity left. There's a loss here, a huge loss, and this hole is swallowing this person whole. And, you know, you can't, there's nothing once you get to that point. All that's left is nothing, and that's what this gave me a feeling of. You feel nothing. You feel this hole, this black spot. It's an excellent write, really well done.
Absolutely, like this void, eh? The only void left behind, I guess. And so well said there, Diane. And Barb, what, you read that so beautifully. What did you think, my dear?
Yeah, beautiful is the right word. Perfect title, Black Hole. We immediately know that there's not going to be a whole lot of positive things coming from this. I love that first stanza, kissing soft sailing lips goodbye. Often when we lose someone in our lives, we don't get to say goodbye. It's like it's a text, it's a phone call, it's an email. But to have that moment where you know that was the last kiss and it's stained by tears and they're salty, if you're going to have so many memories. Like you've got taste, you've got feeling from touch, so many senses described in that goodbye that is just absolutely going to be parked in the brain for a very long time. And the use of the black hole as a metaphor, is perfection. Because, of course, black holes eat light. I mean, light cannot exist inside of a black hole, that, hence the name. And I just love the descriptor, like a black hole sucking in the sunshine of days. There's just such a depth of despair that is so beautifully and poetically described in this piece of work. It's brilliant. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I had a heaviness reading it. And I'm sure that was the intent, because there's a heaviness in the person who experienced this. So to be able to translate what she experienced into the receiving of this poem, she did her job, and really well done.
Yeah, absolutely. Forgotten Dream is like, oh my gracious, she writes, this girl can write, but so can so many others on our AP. There's so much talent that I'm blown away, oh my gracious, every time. And these shows, you know, I'm just, okay, Naomi, you have work to do, but it's so inspiring. So much. And what do we have up next, Diane?
Up next, we have Inspiration by Mac and Drew. And I will go ahead and give that a read.
Okay.
As poet, I stand upon the earth's pinnacle, so high I can see all but make out nothing. A little prince overseeing his world. The birds far below, mere specks of fantasy, floating in a sea of white. They gave me no inspiration. Far lower yet is mankind, lost to me as molecules of dust. Sitting, I fold my paper, and again, till I hold a model plane. Casting it to the wind, I watch its long descent, an empty angel bearing messages to earth. Damn, that's good. Retrieving my pen, I begin writing upon my arm. End poem.
Wow. Hey. So, oops, my daughter. My daughter.
So I will go and take over for Naomi, and I'll go ahead and ask you, Mr. Ed, what is your take on this rite?
I actually said I like the third stanza because I was I like the use of a model plane and casting it out to the wind and watch its long descent and an empty angel bearing messages to the earth. I thought that was a lovely rite, considering I was an aircraft mechanic all my life. So I enjoy things that fly, and I can visualize that being in the air, and I thought it was done very well.
I very much agree. It was done very well. And I like the touch of the model plane. I like that was brought into it, casting it to the wind. It gave that inspiration title. It gave rise to it. It pumps it up. It gives it that flight that inspiration should have. And just beautiful, beautiful, right? And Barb, what did you take on this one?
I thought it was really well written, and I love how he calls himself a little prince overseeing his world. So it's almost like standing on the pinnacle as a poet. He sees himself almost as a lord, almost, I hate to say God, but, you know, he thinks he is above the fray and can stand there and judge with his pen as he sees what he chooses to see and writes about what he chooses to write about. And he may deign to throw one of his gems down upon the peoples if he so deems. I thought it was great. I think it shows the ego some of us poets may have at times, where we know and we see all and we know how to write about it, and we write about it better than you write about it, and that whole spiral we can get ourselves into. But, you know, we stand on that pinnacle, or this poet sees himself standing on this pinnacle, and then just, you know, self-congratulatory. Damn, that's good. And then retrieving my pen, I begin writing upon my arm. It's like, well, he's just thrown his paper down to the people. So he's, and that's about the thing about poetry. If you really are truly a writer in the depth of who you are compelled to write. And if you have nothing upon which you can write, man, it's like, there's your flesh. Get a pen. Because you just have to express what's on your heart. And so I just thought this was actually a really great look at kind of the ego that poetry can have, and just feeling you're above the fray, but that you also want to share your work. And I think part of this, what's interesting about this, is when you put yourself on a pinnacle, you don't have to listen to how people receive your work, because sometimes that can be really challenging. But I think that's how we get better, honestly, is by listening to how our work is received. But a lot of great imagery, and I really enjoyed it.
Yes, I totally agree with you. It's a powerful piece, and it captures you. It makes you think, and inspiration for sure. And Naomi, did you get a chance to get back to us?
Yeah, I got back to you, and my gracious. Diane, can you just continue doing what you're doing? Because I have a family-ish problem here. Crisis.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, yeah. No problem. So I'll
send you a message.
Okay. Up next is A Trilogy of Brevity by Roger Satnerine. And would you like to give that one a read, Ed?
I cannot read it because it won't come up on my computer for some reason. He has to be blocked, I guess.
I just posted it again. See if it's up there now.
Yeah, I it won't come up on my page. I hit it and it says sorry,
Okay. Barb, would you like to give this a read, please?
Absolutely. A Trilogy of Brevity by Roger Satnarine, subtitled Food for Thought. 1. A Slice of Life. What are the ingredients, as well as temperature setting, in this mix of nutrients of a dish worth not forgetting, one that feeds all of mankind, nourishment for his salvation, a dusk's meal we've hoped to find, lost since the dawn of creation. And so what would it take? Please find this recipe showing us how to make peace for humanity. Alas, it's been found and made without strife. So would you care for a slice of life? 2. Immortality in fruition. Since the flesh of mankind is soulfully enslaved by life until death's hunger sets him free without objection, then it remains, who'd question without strife those spirited answers to his immortality in fruition? 3. Transcendence. If ever mankind didn't need food nor water to live, and sleep was optional, is that cruel or kind? Perhaps a non-forgive when life becomes unconditional. Be known, we're all descendants, whence everyone moans for their transcendence. End poem.
Excellent read there, Barb. Thank you very much. And Ed, are you able to comment on this one?
Yeah, I could comment. You know, this is a poem about making peace for humanity, and it's very strong emotional type of expression of life, and what we have to do to make peace and to live in this world. That's what I got out of it.
Yeah, I totally like that, what you said, to making peace out of this world for what you have, whatever the ingredients are to make peace. Make peace, you know, take a slice out of life. And I love the clever creativity around using food to talk about life and immortality and whatnot. It's just an amazing piece. And Barb, what was your take on this when you read this beautifully?
Well, thanks. Yeah, well, it's a beautiful poem. And in three parts, he's talking about faith. And certainly the second section, immortality in fruition, basically, well, we know what the answer is. So, like, there's like no options. There's no alternatives. It's like, eat of this bread. There's your immortality. And in the beginning, it's that invitation. It's like, okay, is there a recipe for living together in harmony? And well, yes, there is. And so like, let's all take a slice. Here's the recipe. Here's the ingredients. We just need to bake it. So he's got a lot of great ingredients for his perspective on how to live with harmony, how to reach immortality, and just, you know, be kind to each other. It's like he's basically saying there's really no mystery, people. The answer's there. You just got to open your eyes and take a slice. Like, sit at the table. Come sit at the table. It was really creative.
Yeah, very, very creative. I like that when the creativity comes through as something like a metaphors of food and whatnot. I love that kind of creativity in writing. And it looks like Naomi is back. So, Naomi, did you hear that poem at all, or should I just move on?
Move on. Move on. I'm so sorry. I'll leave a longer message and commenting.
Okay, I will just a sec.
And continue on the rest of the show, Diane. You're doing fine.
Oh, really? Are you sure? Because I'm okay with you taking over.
Oh, well, I'm still getting messages in, so, yeah.
Okay, well, no worries. I can keep it up, girl. Okay, that was a trilogy. I'm just a little slow putting up the next one here. Give me a moment. And here we go. And up next is I Am the Pearl by Oshimi Creations. And Ed, can you read this one?
Yes. Yes, it came up. I am a pearl. I'm the pearl that is formed when irritants invade the oyster's environment. I'm the pearl that is formed when the oyster patiently goes through those irritants that invade its environment. I'm the pearl that is formed when the oyster uses the strategies and looks and tools it has to shape those irritants we sought after treasure. I'm the pearl, that pearl living as a testament that irritants can't kill me. They can only provide the platform that will build me, prepare me, and shape me into deeply sought after treasure. End poem.
Thank you, Ed. Great read, great read. You have the right voice for these dark on the dark side of these. You have a great voice for powerfully pushing it out. Well done.
Thank you.
I am the pearl. And Barb, what was your take on this one?
How Oshimi built on her original concept in the first three stanzas, adding a little bit each time. I'm the pearl that is formed, and then when irritants invade, and then it's when the oyster patiently goes through those irritants. And then when the oyster uses the strategies and tools it has to shape those irritants into deeply sought after treasure. I love the underlying concept that the tragedies and the struggles and the difficulties in our lives are often the things that shape us, that turn us into creations that are more beautiful than we were before those difficulties came. They help us, we need to equip ourselves with ways to get through those hard and dark times. And in that passage to the darkness, often we end up with this glow, if you will, of understanding, of perseverance. Often we attract beautiful people to us who help us to cope and to get through those hard times, and they add a sheen and a gleam to our existence, new friendships, deepening friendships that help us to deal with these irritants. So often the difficulties in our life really can help us shine. We don't see the process can be very difficult, obviously, but the end result, I think, in most cases, is so worth whatever we have to go through, especially if it ends up deepening or attracting new friends that have such a value in our lives. I thought she did a great job of keeping to one metaphor, working it, adding, building. And she built her metaphor in much the same way as an oyster lays down those layers on top of the irritant, surround the irritant with beauty. In her poem, she did the same thing, added layer on layer on layer until in the end, you're left with the treasure, which in this case is her. really beautiful work.
Very much agree. Very much agree. It's an amazing piece of writing. And the writer in the author's notes talks about, you know, their first name being Oisin and it being representative of the pearl. One of the meanings of that name is the pearl. And then I am the pearl rising up. And then this writer goes on to connect their life to the life of the forming of a pearl. So it's just a beautiful personification of yourself into a gem, into a thing, an object, right? And becoming that object, becoming that pearl is just powerfully done and well written. And Ed, you read that beautifully. What did you think?
Well, like you said, you know, when you read the bottom note, I said, I love how she uses a pearl and to make the explanation of how she makes it through life and how beautiful pearl is at the end and all what she has done to get to that point. I thought it was wonderful of how she explained the details of the life of an oyster and a pearl as to her life. I thought it was a wonderful job.
I very much agree with you. And Naomi, are you able to comment on this?
Yeah. Yeah, this is beautiful by Oisin. And, you know, I would have liked to have heard this in her voice. You know, I bet it would have been something else to, you know, to hear it in her, with her enthusiasm and, you know, her with what she does, her SoundCloud. You know, yeah, I really loved, you know, like was it Ed or was it Barb that was saying, like, or you even maybe, Diane, that it was like an extended metaphor, like a personification of herself. So, you know, wonderfully well composed this poem, I Am the Pearl. And I think Barb, you know, said a lot, you know, just how she was formed and how she was, you know, she was forged into this beautiful pearl through all that, you know, she's going through and who the people she meets and, you know, everything that's around her forged her into who she is. So wonderful, wonderful, you know, unique and very creative.
Very, very, very much so. Well said. And I think that's everybody. So up next is Ashes from Ashes by our very own Puddles 33. And it has a SoundCloud, does it?
Yes.
Ashes from Ashes.
Here it is.
By Barb Christing. We're all ashes from ashes, dust from dust, particulate matter that learns to trust in the truth of reality flung from afar, celestial gossip that fell from a star. Our reasoning powers can topple a brain, designed to confuse, give us sunlight from rain. Five senses dissolve into murky black waste, ubiquitous feelings delivered in haste. It's all a bad dream, a mysterious play that drags us from midnight to life's disarray. We're blind to the purpose. We're wrapped up in fear. Disintegrate daily because nothing is clear. We're ashes from ashes, returning to dust. The galaxy's empty. We've all been concussed.
Excellent read and write. And Barb, thank you so much for sending in a SoundCloud. We love SoundClouds. There's nothing better than hearing
the writing read in the poet's voice. So if you are able to create a SoundCloud, if you can't call in, it would be great to have a SoundCloud with your own voice on it. Well done, Barb. Thank you very much. And Ed, what did you think of Barb's write?
I agree with you with the SoundCloud. It brings out the emotion of the person that wrote it by listening to their words and how they feel themselves as to someone else reading it. But I think the third stanza is one of my favorite. It's all a bad dream, a mystery play that drags us from the midnight to life's disarray. You know, that's so much truthfulness to this of what happens to our lives, and to be able to deal with it is like sometimes we can't, and sometimes we let it go away, and it returns to dust. You try to forget it, but for somehow it's still there in you. But it was done very well. I loved the SoundCloud.
Yes, it was done exceptionally well, and there's a lot of power in, you know, we're all ashes from ashes, dust from dust, particulate matter that learns to trust. And that's so true. We have to do that. Everything we are about coming from ashes and coming from a place of fine dust, you know, just a fine dust. That's where we come from. And in the truth of reality, flung from afar, celestial gossip that fell from a star. Excellent rhyming and meter. We're ashes from ashes, returning to dust. The galaxy's empty. We've all been concussed. It's powerfully done about, you know, where we are and where we're going and what we've come from. And exactly, it's got a emptiness to it, a hole, like there's a hole there, and just a powerful write. And Naomi, what was your take on this one, my dear?
Yeah, well, you know, just you know, it can be overpowering and angry, and you know, you can feel what is the word in English, langoisse, like a kind of frenetic, not worry, but I hate that when that happens, you know. I'm caught in French and I can't find the English word. you know, like a kind of frenetic, like a stress. It can be stressful for a lot of people, you know, when you think of, you know, where you've come from, where you're going, not knowing really, you know, where did we come from? Where are we going? You know, the galaxy is so vast. And, you know, I know a lot of young people that have suffered from these questions, like really suffered, you know, from a young age. Well, I'm talking about, you know, my own children here. And, you know, when you have nothing to clasp on to, I think that's why, you know, faith is so great in that area, you know, when you can have faith in a God and in something, you know, a greater power, you know, it's like it's a comforting, you know, that when you die, you're going to go up to heaven. But when you don't have that, it's as if you're just floating in a sort of void, like you're ashes from ashes, dust to from dust. Just exactly like that. That's so powerful, so great, you know, written to that image, by the way, I have to say, Barb, you know, you envelop that prompt that art so, so well in this, right? And, but, you know, continuing to what I was saying, you know, you're just, you can be wrapped up in that fear of feeling that you, like you put it, disintegrating daily, causing nothing is clear. Like you don't know what your purpose is here. You don't know where you're going. You don't know where you came from. You know, so it can all be like, you know, caving in on you, you know. And I know a lot of, like I said, young people that suffered from it, you know, especially when they had time to think a lot during COVID. You know, my son had a breakdown and he was like, you know, like on the top of his, you know, field and, you know, not worrying about much. But, you know, when they had time to think of all this stuff, and my other son started asking questions about it since, you know, he was like five, I think, you know. And so, yeah, it can be I can't get that word. It can be very stressful, anyway, for a lot of people. I don't know if I captured all you that you meant by this poem. I'd like to have your feedback on this, right, Barb? Like, what were you thinking when you wrote it?
Well, I hope you read the author's notes, what I put in bold. It was just...
Okay.
It was just such a compelling image. And sometimes I like to do the exercise of writing that which I do not believe. I was born and raised a very strong Catholic. When I was a young adult, I actually went away for a weekend for young women who were considering entering the nunnery. So I have a very strong foundation in the faith. But then I went on to college and got a degree in science and worked my entire career in the field of biology and natural, you know, the nature. And I had my own environmental consulting firm. And so, you know, you read about Darwin and the Bible. And so there is a lot of conflicting information swirling around inside every pore of me. And so I was able to tap into the questioning part of who I am and to write this piece. But my outlook on life is not this bleak. But I know there are many people, and like you say, Naomi, a lot of young people who don't have that foundation of faith. It would be very difficult, I think, to navigate the day-to-day if you don't have that hope of a higher power giving meaning to every step that you take and every turn that's in front of you. So we're all on a spectrum. We're on a spectrum of belief. And this was just tapping into the side where, wow, there's just nothing out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a very thought-provoking piece, as we saw. And, yeah, you know, it brought up a lot of discussion. And thank you so much for that. You know, I thought this was a great, great write, Barb. A wonderful write to that prompt. And very thought-provoking indeed. And I'm turning it back to you, Diane.
Yes, I'm going to post up next our friend Wayne, who's on the board. Wayne Gent's post has a SoundCloud. It's called I Walk Alone. And what I will do is post this right, and then I'm going to say goodnight to you guys because I have to hop off a little early.
Okay, I'll take over, Diane. No problem.
Okay, we'll see you guys next week. And here it is, guys.
Good night to you.
This is called I Walk Alone by Wayne Gent. I've journeyed a while in the sands of time, live life my way. without committing a crime. The path I chose has taken me far. The light that guides me is not a star. The path I took, I traveled alone. Many miles I trekked across the unknown. The light I have shows me the way to turn on the light. I just have to pray. My path tomorrow will end up ahead. I'll have no regrets when I'm dead. And at the end of my journey, I must confide. I kept the Lord above in my heart to reside. And
I love that SoundCloud, Wayne, and the music, the background music, just amazing. It just went along with the poem so well. And, you know, what a great, you know, testimony, you know, that journey of your life with your faith in the Lord by your side as a guide. You know, wonderful rhythm and flow through the whole piece, Wayne. You know, just wonderfully done. And what did you think, Ed?
I thought it was lovely listening to his voice. He actually, you know, brought it out slow with the music, which really made it strong. And the rhyming, the rhythm was excellent. He done an excellent job. You know, sometimes when they'd call, he's always hurrying, but this here, he was down slow and nice, and you could hear each word pronounced well, and it just goes well with the music. That's what was so nice about it. Everything went so well with the music, and I commend what he did. He did a lovely job.
Absolutely. Wonderful, wonderful comment. And what did you think, Barb?
Yeah, I thought it was beautiful. It was like this beautiful performance in the music, set a wonderful tone, which was matched by the cadence of his reading, which was matched by the beauty and the reverence of his word choices. So as a package, it was very calming, very peaceful. I really love these two lines. The light I have shows me the way to turn on light. I just have to pray. It's like I have light at my disposal day and night. And I just love the meaning that comes with that and the power that comes with that and the confidence that can come with that. It's a beautiful piece. It had all the elements that a great poem needs. He took us on a journey. I've journeyed a while in the sands of time. And throughout his whole journey, he didn't journey alone. He journeyed it with God, and that gave him the peace from the first step to his final breath. And I really thought it was very well done, well, quote-unquote, performed. I really enjoyed it. Thank you, Wayne.
Wonderful comment. I'm just trying to get back here to see, you know, what what poems were read and which ones were not read, because, oh boy, I'm so mixed up here. Okay, so I did put up a next poem by... I think I did put it up, by Jody Melton, Once. And Ed, if you can give that a read for us, please.
Sure. Once, in the windmill of my heart, dusty corners conceal echoes of forgotten dreams and love's vibrant hues. A carousel of dreams now frozen, wooden sails stand motionless. The creaking sound of a rusty swing, a pendulum between then and now. Time has woven a soft melancholy, and the cap becomes a museum of what once was. Fragments of passion lie dormant, embracing the shadows. Those dreams fly like the birds, once stars in my universe, now faint constellations of bygone eras. Love's renaissance, a muted melody fading into recesses of memory, adorned by quiet sighs of what could have been. End poem.
Wow, what a wonderful read, Dad, that was. And, you know, what a beautiful write by a beautiful nostalgic write on all those what ifs. You know, the creaking sound of a rusty swing, a pendulum between then and now. Time has woven a soft melancholy, and the cap becomes a museum of what once was. You know, just so beautifully crafted, the whole piece. And it's very rare that Mr. Melton doesn't rhyme, but, you know, I just love this. You know, it's in free verse. It's just, you know, it's as if all the emotions are pouring out. And I loved that the take that he has, the original unique take that he has on that art prompt, which was, you know, a man beside in front of a windmill, I think. And, you know, just wonderful the way this just flows. You know, both melancholic, nostalgic, and just the emotions that pour out of this is just amazing. What did you think, Barb?
Yeah, I thought it was beautiful, and I love your descriptors being melancholy and filled with despair. But what's interesting is it's what was in the past, and I loved the imagery he used. Like, I could almost hear the creaking sound of the rusty swing. But what's interesting is all these things, like, so the swing is now rusty, but there's a swing. Somewhere in time, that swing held a lot of laughter, but now it's just creaking with rust. And then there's carousel of dreams that is standing frozen, but there's that carousel filled with all those wonderful horses and rabbits to ride. So he has in his heart that carousel, but now it's frozen. And then there's those wooden sails. You know, sails are supposed to be filled with air, and they take you amazing places, but his is now standing motionless, and yet in his heart he still has those sails. So, you know, that saying, it's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all, but that does not lessen the pain. And I think Jody did a fabulous job of building up the depth of that love so that we feel the depth of the fall and the depth of the loss. Really well done.
Oh, that's a great, great comic, Barb. Yeah, amazing comic. And what did you think, Ed? You read that just so beautifully.
Thank you. Jody has brought out a very emotional a sense of meaning to many people, and it's done very ingenious of how he has all these metaphors that flow into what he is bringing out of pain that once was. And I thought it was a lovely poem with so much meaning that many can relate to.
Absolutely. You know, that's it. Just it. You can relate to this poem. You know, so many of us, you know, we, just the emotion that flows out, we can just grasp it. And yeah, I guess that was our last poem for this evening. It's 8:59. And, you know, I just want to thank my co-host, Diane, and you, Ed, for being wonderful, wonderful co-hosts, being there, you know, when things go wrong, like they did a little bit tonight, I go astray. And thank you, Miriam, who phoned in to stay with us for a little while. Thank you, Barb, so, so much. We so appreciate, you know, you every time. You have great comments and helping us read. And thank you, Wayne, for the board. And, you know, there's other people on the board too. So thank you so much for the people who stayed on the board. Thank you, Pam, for everything you do in the background. And thank you, Phil, also. And and have a great night, everybody. And look out for our other contests on our boards and, you know, on LNP. And so participate in those contests. So thank you, everybody, and have a great night.
Good night.